Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani, I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Joining me once again in studio is Kate Pater and Duncan Mabasel. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Gary. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Kate. Hi, Gary. Hi, audience.
Also joining us today is law student Lionel Makokotlela. Hi to you, Lionel.
Thank you for inviting me, Gary.
Good. You're a third-year BCom law degree student.
That's right.
Yeah, we like to give law students an opportunity of contributing on our shows. So welcome to you, Lionel. Good to have you here.
Thank you once again. Hope that I can add a little bit of wisdom or share the little pill that I happen to have at the moment.
Thank you. Well, I'll tell you what wisdom you can share with us. Apart from your interest in law, I think you have a host of other degrees.
Yes, I do.
Tell us about them. Yeah.
I happen to have a BTEC degree in Economic Management Analysis, a BTEC degree in Project Management. I've got an MBA, I've got an MTEC, and now I'm doing my BCom Law, and hopefully next year I will do my LLB.
This is a bit embarrassing for us,
Gary. Well, I'm so embarrassed, Gary. I have nothing in my life.
Yeah,
you've got us.
Seriously, oh, yeah. Seriously underqualified in studio today. So, Lionel, you're making up for all of us.
Oh, no. Come on, guys.
The good thing about him is he's humble.
Well, that's it.
No. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, you probably might agree or disagree with me. They've been saying that a lot of South African youth are very lazy. They're not willing to go to school. And now it's that opportunity for us to utilize the platforms that are afforded to us in terms of empowering ourselves with knowledge and education. So I'm really taking that with both hands.
Yeah, good for you, and welcome here. I hope you enjoy it here.
No, I'm really enjoying it thus far. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, now to our main story. Today, live in studio, the mother of a 14-year-old girl, Clara, the teen who tragically jumped to her death from the roof of a shopping center in August. Thank you for joining us, Liesl Gottert.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to you. Mm. So, Liesl, by all accounts, the loss of a child is traumatic and brutal. And we thank you for being here today to create awareness on the very sensitive and serious issue of teen depression.
Yes.
That's really what we're going to be talking about. Mm. Yeah. Mm. This is not going to be easy because we're going to spend some time together. And I do probe and...
That's fine.
If I upset you, if I start being a little tearful, forgive me.
I'll kick you under the table.
Okay. If you'd like to talk to Liesl or you have anything you'd like to share with us, please let us know on 0861-555-189. You can Skype us on cliffcentral.com or you can message us, Kate.
Yeah, or get us on Twitter at Hertzlaw, HERTZLAW.
Yeah. Liesl, it's been reported all over that you have said Clara, your 14-year-old, was the friendliest, most loving child with such a soft heart. Mm. Tell us a little more.
You know, she was. She was, ever since she was born, she was just so different. I had three children, and her elder two siblings is Rebecca. She's 20 and studying in Germany at the moment at Heidelberg University. And my son is a matric at the German school in Johannesburg. And Clara was the youngest. And she was just the most incredible, wonderful angel child ever since she was born. And I'm not saying that to eulogize her or because she was so cute or sweet or immortalize or her. But she was always on a different plane. A little bit of stubborn, a little bit of attitude, but kind and generous and wonderful. To the point of a week before she died, I was still talking to staff that in one of my shops, and I said I told them a week before I can't understand how this person is so different to other human beings. She's almost like a little angel who is not holier than thou or perfect by any means, but there is a different dynamic about her that you just can't put your finger on and you can't explain it. And sure enough, she came into our lives. She was lent to us for 14 years, and she left as fast as she came into our lives.
Mm. They say God takes wonderful people. He wants them up with him.
Yes.
Anyway, if you believe in that.
Yeah.
Did she struggle with mental health issues, or is that something you didn't really know about?
Not at all. Not as far as I could see. Mm. She did, you know, we did have family troubles, and we did have teenage issues with her and her brother and sister. But I don't think any more than any average family would have. You know, teenagers drive you nuts. I drove my parents nuts when I was at school.
Yeah, we can see that.
And there are huge emotions in those teenage years that teenagers struggle to deal with. And there must have been 1,000 other more alarming red lights with my elder children that are normal issues that Clara never had. She internalized it more. She didn't talk that much. But I think, in retrospect, I think because she was an artist, she could draw really well, and she was a deep person and an old soul who understood things. I mean, when she was 5 and 6 years old, she used to startle me with comments and statements that 95-year-old people couldn't comprehend of.
Wow.
And I think she was so in tune with those things that perhaps she felt pain or disappointment or heartache to a far greater extent than you and I would.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe that just affected her much worse than it would have the average person.
There's a beautiful video that I encourage our listeners to pick up. It's created by her father, Clara's father.
Mm.
It's a tribute to her, and it was played at her funeral.
Yes.
It shows Clara horse riding, abseiling, and playing on the beach. We're going to tweet it out.
Mm.
If you don't get the tweet, just have a look on Google. It's just put in there a beautiful video tribute to Clara Gotter, Gotterd. And I think we get to see how beautiful she really was in many respects.
Yeah, it's such a it's a tragedy and a
celebration at the same
time.
Yes,
but also because she had such a zest for life, and she was really passionate about living. And I just have to say, my mom has been visiting me at the past week. I just took her to the airport to go back to Cape Town, and one of the issues we discussed even now is Clara loved heights. She loved climbing on the roof of the house. I gave her hell every time she did. Mm. She used to climb onto the roof of shopping malls, I heard after her death, with her best friend and doing skateboarding stunts and all sorts. And, you know, there is the possibility. Nobody was standing next to her on that fateful day. And there is the possibility that she went up there to sit and chill, like she used to so often. And even my son told me yesterday, you know, he used to follow her up onto the roof of the house and watch her, how she walked on the edge of the roof and wobbled and laughed and enjoyed it. And there is no jury out that can say that she actually jumped that day. I think that the police said that on the day. But we don't know what happened. She was in her own world, in her own mind. And she was on that roof, and all we know is that she was up there, and she ended up dead on the floor. And we don't know whether it was intentional, whether she slipped, whether she was thinking about other things or contemplating life. It was a tragic and a difficult day, and a lot of things led up to that event. But what actually went through her mind those moments before she hit the floor, we don't know.
How many floors up was it?
She came from the roof of Northgate Shopping Centre, entrance number 4, just above the crazy store. Iceland.
Of all places, yeah.
Yes, because she loved the ice skating rink. She used to ice skate and skateboard and do her parkour stunts on the roof of Northgate Shopping Centre and Cresta Shopping Centre. And then she loved heights and sitting there, and apparently her and her best friend used to admire and talk about archangels and their wings and how they would grow wings and fly away. This also I heard after the fact.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of issues, a lot of questions, a lot of still that will remain unanswered for a long time. And I've spent the last...
It's not even 6 months.
No.
It's 6 months yesterday, I think.
Yes, no, it was seven months.
Is it seven months?
Yeah, 7 months.
You're remarkable that you... You're even here to talk to us about this.
Yes,
yeah.
Well, I think sometimes I just go over into manual mode and do what must be done, and it's nothing more than that, really. But a lot happened on that day. A lot of fingers could be pointed and judged and nasty things, but the bottom line is we've got to focus on where we are, what we need to do to help and heal each other.
This is what you said. You said... It's the second morning that I have to face this world without my little girl.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote on Facebook, you said, I never knew that a human body could produce so many tears.
No, it was very hard.
Yeah.
I think I've been through a lot of ups and downs in this time, and it's been incredibly hard. But I must tell you that without the help and support, and I know it sounds like a cliche, people always say, oh, no, you know, thank you to this one and this one and this one, like I'm winning an Oscar. Mm. But it's not that. Genuinely, without the help and support of some family members, some friends, and strangers from left field, from anywhere that you don't even know, it has been an incredible source of support and strength. And I certainly can't take credit for being rah-rah so strong. Because I wasn't, you know, I've had really deep and dark times.
You've said the pain is unbearable. I would gladly have given my life for her to have lived. They could have amputated both my legs, my arms, taken out my heart. I would have given all of that just to see her live a full life.
Mm, I would have. And I think every mother feels that. You know, because she was just such a wonderful girl, and then something went wrong. Something went wrong in her, and I've tried to work it out. I've thought of this thing from a thousand different angles. I'm writing a book. I'm almost done with it now. I don't know if I'll publish it because it's difficult to decide. Mm. You know what information you want in the public domain and what not, But I don't think I'm such a martyr that I said that. I think every mom, every parent feels that. And Clara was, you know, the fact that she was so different to other children and other people made it so much harder for me to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, with the support of people and working through the process, writing about it, thinking about it, trying to unpack it, not being judgmental or not hanging on to anger towards certain people who had a role to play. And there were people, friends, family, situations on the day, strangers who were stupid or ignorant or didn't think or made mistakes that you would assume normal people wouldn't do. To hang on to those things would absolutely consume and kill you, and you have to distance yourself from some of those things and try and grab what's good and just try and move on. First of all, just try and continue breathing, and then try and find sense in, is life worth living for me and for those around us?
Sure. There's something that is also going to make us very sad. It's you singing, you were singing at your daughter's funeral.
Yes.
Do you mind if I play that?
You're welcome, yeah. I didn't know anyone recorded it.
Yeah, this is it.
Okay.
Sing, Mother, sing, Mother, I give song.
Yeah.
It was very hard to sing that. I battled to keep the tears back. I studied classical music, and I love singing. It would have been my career, but I decided to go another route. Well, I had to keep the pot cooking. And it was very hard to do it on that day, but I felt I owed it to her because we used to sing together.
One of our listeners, Tessa Friedman, says that video made me feel desperate as to why a young girl would do such a thing.
Mm.
I can't help wondering why. Was it school pressure or peer pressure? Kids today live such a pressurized existence, she says, that maybe it's just too much for them.
You know, I always thought I was this super mom, and I'm clever, and I'm so in tune with my children, and I talk to them, and I always talk to Clara. I talk to her about her feelings, her emotions, about one day when she has a boyfriend, when she does this and that. And there is no textbook in life. You know, some children are more open and giving and understanding. Other children are more closed and introverted. And I really tried my best, you know, at the time, and even now I was a single mother with an unstable income, and I bust my ass to try and keep the family together, to try and feed the children, give them the best I could. And while I did that, I tried to stay in touch with their feelings and emotions. I talked to her the day before she died. She packed her bag the morning she died. She had her bag over her shoulder. She walked out the front door, and I said, hey, come here. And I said, there's something I must tell you. And she rolled her eyes, and she said, I know you love me. And there were so many instances like that that we were in touch. Mm. And there were a number of different issues and difficulties that she had, the family had, I had, we all did. But it was nothing that was
monumental.
Yes, or out of the ordinary, so bad. Altogether, the sum total of that could have had a far greater impact on her than I'd realized or her friends had realized. And there were, of course, there were certain issues that were bigger than others. You know, I heard later that there was a boy that she liked and he rejected her. And to you and me, it's, oh, yeah, you know, it's another 14-year-old and blah, blah, and we all went through that. But if you think back of the first time that you were in love with someone or you had a crush on someone, and they rejected you, that pain is terrible. It is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And if that's one of 10 instances, and those things happen to happen on the same day, and the pain of depression is so bad that you will do anything. You will jump off a roof just to make the pain stop. And you don't have the experience of life to say, well, I have felt like this 5 times in my life where I thought it was the end of the world. I actually felt better the next day or the next week. And you get through these things. A 14-year-old child who is in touch for the first time in their life with physical changes in their body, emotional changes that are huge and hurt so much. I mean, the hurt, when you have pain, it is monumental. When you have happiness, it is monumental. When you hear a great song that really touches your spirit, it's so great. It feels like you're flying above the clouds.
Yeah.
But the same applies for the opposite. When someone hurts you, it's so sore. And to multiply that by 10 with small issues that then escalate, that can push you over the edge on that day. And that specific moment that you feel so bad shouldn't define your life. Shouldn't define who you have been.
Absolutely.
Up until that moment.
Sure. I think something that obviously attacked you was the feeling that why was your love not strong enough to save her? Did you go through that feeling? And I think what you want to do today is, the point of today is to let us all know how much you loved her.
Mm.
And that we can't berate ourselves as parents for everything.
Yes.
This happened, could happen, God forbid, to any parent.
Mm-hmm.
You don't blame yourself in any way, or are you living through that?
I do, of course. I think it would be unnatural not to. Mm. And I think every parent who goes through this thing, first of all, look at themselves and blame themselves. Everyone who knew Clara, her friends, her teachers, family, parents, everyone says, what could I have done? I should have done this. I should have done that. I should not have done this. I should not have done that.
Mm.
And for a parent, her number one primary caregiver, her mother, of course you feel the number one responsible person. In this time, I've gotten to know quite a number of people, women, parents, mothers, and one mom who lives in Stellenbosch. She's a professor, head of the media department in Stellenbosch University. She also said we were speaking Afrikaans, and she said, you know, M always used to stand for mother, and now it stands for mislukking, which is failure. So in English terms, you feel like you get a big fat F in life for being a failure as a mother. And I think that's why parents don't speak out about it, because they feel so embarrassed and humiliated and think they have failed a human being. Because even though I may not have been responsible for A, B or C, that caused her death on that particular day, it's like the CEO of a company who is responsible for the entire operation. Even if 10 things go wrong, I'm still the responsible person at the head of that entity who must take the blame.
But as you say, I mean, there is no textbook with children. You do the best you can. You feel like you're cocking up most of the time. And you endeavor to do better or whatever. But the fact of the matter is it's a very difficult task, parenting a child, any age child. And I think we're very quick to judge one another. And an instance like this, I think, is every parent's nightmare. So you look for a scapegoat. You sort of think, well, there must have been something wrong because that can't happen to my child.
Yes.
For all of the things that you've actually just pointed out, that you spoke to them, you were interested in their lives, they were involved. So I think that's actually another point, is that a lot of us just need to start being a lot more honest about how difficult it is to parent.
You mentioned Professor Rabi from Stellenbosch. We have this wonderful woman online with us. She also lost a brilliant young son. Tragically, he also took his own life, so she knows exactly what you've been through. She's also got a website called Survivors of Suicide. You know about all this. Let's talk to her, Prof.
Yes, good afternoon.
It's very strange that Liesl mentioned your name and just before you came through, and she said that the two of you were in contact with one another. I think you've given her great support, and credit to you for that. We need everyone in these kind of situations that can help us. You also had a tragedy yourself, so you know all about it.
Yeah.
Prof, you wrote a letter, I think you wrote the letter, which I saw. And I want to quote a bit of it. You wrote a letter to a person who had lost a child, or a family had lost a child, and you said, parents who have lost a child are the bravest people in the world. To have to carry on living when you have lost your own self. Those who have lost a child to depression are the bravest of all. Is that your Are those your words?
Yes, and I truly believe that, and Liesl will also know, you know, just to get up every day and see the sun has risen and the sun will rise the next day as well. It is, you know, for people to judge when something like a death to depression happens to a family, is they really don't know how fortunate they are that they haven't been touched by depression, because, you know, any discussion on suicide should be discussed in relation to depression. It cannot be discussed without that cause of suicide, because we know research shows that in the majority of cases, more than 90%, in fact, the cause is depression, and depression can be caused by many factors. You can say, how can a young child like Clara suffer from depression? But we know what the psychosocial pressures are on children, and how things can go wrong. And if we don't then have a society where one is permitted to say, I don't feel well, I feel anxious, I get these anxiety attacks, etc., you won't get young teenagers, especially in that very formative years of early teenage, to speak about that. And so, you know, we need to be open about the S word, but to be open about the S word, we need to be open about the D word. We need to say depression is a clinical biological disease, and although many of those who die as a result of depression might never have been diagnosed by, you know, diagnosed that they suffer from depression. In many cases, it was masked depression or undiagnosed depression. So depression is the cause of suicide, and we need to acknowledge that, because in that way we humanize every tragedy as a result of suicide. We know 23 people in South Africa per day die of suicide, and there are 230 attempts by people who just cannot face life anymore per day. Mm. So the need to talk about depression and the resultant fatal depression, which is suicide, we really need to be open and talk about it in our society.
Yeah, Professor Lizette Robbie, you've said, and I'd like to quote you, you've said that we should not shy away from talking about suicide with our children. Is this a topic that you raise with your 12-year-old, 13, 14-year-old? Do you talk to them about suicide?
You know, my child was 21 when he died of suicide. He was a medical student who did exceptionally well in his studies. He knew his psychiatry handbook, you know, at the tips of his fingers. And he was diagnosed of depression a year before his death. And yes, we talked about it. But, you know, a fatal depression can happen any moment. It is the result of neurotransmitters in the brain which are not there at that moment. If you think of life as, you know, it is a prehistoric urge to survive. Mm. And if that mode of survival is switched off because of a malfunction, a biological malfunction in the brain, and it doesn't matter how much we talk. That is why we stress from the Itemba Foundation that we need to recognize symptoms from the earliest moment. And so I recognize it in myself or in someone else, so that you can go for either psychotherapy or also medication in time, so that it does not develop to that stage.
We're very, very indebted to you, Professor, and to our guest in studio. You marvelous women are creating awareness. We need to know these things. And if we do, I think we'll handle them better than we are, because too many of our people are trying to take their lives or are, in fact, succeeding in doing so.
So sorry, can I come in?
Please.
Yeah. You know, October is UNESCO's World Health Organization's, the WHO's, Mental Health Awareness Month. And our Itemba Foundation has an awareness-raising hike called the Hope Hike. And this year we're also going to have the Hope Bike for mountain bikers to raise awareness around depression, because that is what we don't have a choice anymore. We suffered the most horrific tragedies in our lives. We need to say, we need to humanize depression. We need to give depression a face. And we need to say it can be fatal. You know, it is like a physical stroke where the brain cannot function anymore. A fatal depression is like a psychological stroke where the brain cannot function in a normal way anymore. And that is why it's also important that we change the language that we use. You know, to commit suicide, there's a movement in the States where they say we need to say someone has died of suicide, because commit means it was a rational decision.
Yes.
And there's no way that a healthy brain can decide to do something like that. It is a totally ill brain suffering from a medical biological disease called depression, or a related disease, bipolar anxiety, which can also be fatal, etc.
Yeah. You want to say something, Liesl, to the professor?
Yes, yeah. I think that one of the greatest tragedies that we are struggling with as a society, even though we don't cognitively realize what we are doing and what we are struggling with, is that not enough people, school principals, individuals, DJs, whoever, people who are decision makers and influencers in life, take serious note of these things and support existing initiatives. Here we have SADAG. They ran out of money not too long ago. Facing closure.
Can I interrupt you there one sec? I think we should give a tribute to Discovery. I think they've offered to give a million rand to SADAG.
Yes, and pharmaceutical companies who have supported them and
fantastic.
Who are still
and
the Temba Foundation that Lizette is talking about. You know, there are existing initiatives that are really good, that have sorted themselves, they've got the right paperwork, they registrations, all of that, and they are not being supported sufficiently to be able to enable them to support people who need that. And you know, I've got this foundation and I had great plans to do ABC, and there just isn't enough money that is available and physical support to help them when those things are there, until you find your own child hanging in the garage. Then all of a sudden it's important to you. And then all of a sudden you get a wake-up call and you say, oh dear, you know, what do we do? But for every human being out there who is a CEO, a managing director, marketing person, whoever, you know, we save rhinos all day and we save AIDS babies and we save this. And all those things are important and they're relevant and really great. But people shy away from this thing where there are children in your home when you come home at 6 o'clock and you had a hard day and you don't have time to talk to your kids. And those children are under your nose and they are the most important asset, emotional asset in your life. And we don't give them strength, financial...
Kate, we can identify with this. I mean, we have little ones at home. I have a five-year-old. You have...
Two three-year-olds. It's horrifying. It's beyond my worst nightmare. It's completely unfathomable to me, not having lost a child, to walk into my house and not know that they are alive. I truthfully don't know where you find the strength, but... I have to commend you.
A year ago, I used to walk into, I'd read about a suicide, and I thought, oh my God, if that ever happened to me, I would absolutely die. Not knowing, me, smart, clever me, it's going to happen to me in my house, in my home. And I talked to my children. I heard of other suicides. I talked to my kids. I talked to Clara about it. And you just never know. In the immediate aftermath of her death, I cannot tell you the number of people who called me. I got about 200 messages, SMSs, Facebook messages from people per day to say, what do we do? Please give us help. Give us advice. My child is this. My child is that. And sometimes I got horrific calls from a child who was 15 years old. Hi, Auntie Liesl, I live in Lusikisiki or Kroonstad or wherever. I've tried to take my life 4 times in the last 6 months because my uncle rapes me every Friday night.
Oh, my God.
And that wasn't once or twice. I can show you pictures on my WhatsApp of kids sending me photographs of where they cut themselves. Not once or twice. 100 or 200 times where their legs look like they've come from a bomb attack in Afghanistan. And they live in Potchefstroom, you know. And
yes, you know, we still have the professor on the line. Professor, you're hearing all this. Anything you want to say before we let you go?
You know, it is. I'd like to commend FADAC, for instance, also. They are doing terrific work with support groups all over the country, etc. And yes, we need to also support NGOs, non-profit companies, etc., to raise awareness and to spread the word that we need to be aware of a killer in society. Because of social psychological pressures, we know, according to statistics, depression is going to be currently it's the third biggest global disease. In 2020, in 6 years from now, it's going to be the second biggest. In 2030, it's going to be the biggest, and it's a debilitating, paralyzing disease. Just in terms of cost of absenteeism at work, it is the biggest cost factor in terms of productivity. So we need to be aware of the reasons for suicide, which is because we now know more, thanks to medical research, is depression and related diseases, and we need to support these initiatives. The important thing is that we should not duplicate. We should not try and do something that FedEx is doing. They have wonderful 24-hour lines. They have wonderful support groups, etc. FedEx, for instance, also has a stall at the Hope Hike every year to spread, you know, to hand out pamphlets on what are the typical what do I need to recognize in my friend or in myself to say, but this is not right. I'm not reacting in the right way to whatever has happened to me, and I probably need to go to the doctor. You would go to the doctor if you had a headache for 2 weeks, and you should also go to the doctor if you don't feel well for 2 weeks. If something is suddenly you feel you're not on the route that you've been up to this point in your life.
Thank you so much to you, Professor, for wonderful advice, for creating the awareness, for being with us.
Perhaps if she could just tell us the website details for their hike.
Yeah, the website for the hike. Yeah,
the hike is organized by the Itemba Foundation. Itemba is a Xhosa word for hope, and you know it was chosen because if depression is the illness of despair, we need to raise hope constantly. We need to build hope. So the website address for the Itemba Foundation is www.itembafoundation.org.za, and then the support website where you know it's like a cyber retreat for people who have lost their loved ones to suicide is the survivorsofsuicide.org.za, where it's really an SOS line to those who are suffering indescribable loss.
Good. Thank you to you, Lizette. We appreciate this.
It's my privilege to participate.
Thank you.
Thank you. And good luck to Lizel also.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, donkey. Okay, we're going to have to break. We actually overran our first half hour. When we come back, we're going to talk to our very bright young law student, Lionel Makoko-Tlela, on the spiritual side of this. It's going to be very interesting. We'll be right back.
I patiently waited for you for 9 months. I would sit in my chair and talk about how I longed to meet you. I knew you'd be the most beautiful baby in the world. I was ready for you, but I wasn't ready for this. If you have a child in need of reconstructive surgery, Smile Foundation can help you. Visit www.smilefoundation.co.za or call us on 0861-276-453.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg with Kate Pater and Lionel Makoko-Tlela. Welcome back, both of you. Kate, very touching this, isn't it?
I really cannot imagine how devastating something like this must be. But hats off to Liesl for coming and talking to us.
Yeah, today live with us is the mother, Liesl, of the 14-year-old little teen girl who tragically jumped to her death from the roof of, I think it was Northgate shopping mall.
That's right.
7 months ago. Lionel, you want to ask one or two questions of Liesl?
No, thank you. Yes, I do. First of all, Liesl, I just want to thank you for allowing us to be part of your story. And secondly, I just want to, because given the nature that you've just painted right now with regard to young children sending you WhatsApp messages in relation to the abuse that they are experiencing, what is it that you are doing in the name of your daughter as a way of keeping her spirit alive? Because you've painted a picture of a vibrant young girl who had a soul of a sage. So in the name of her, what is it that you are willing to do so that you can empower those young girls or boys who are actually going through a difficult experience?
I think there's a number of things that we'd like to do and that we initially planned on doing and that we are now doing. So, and it all depends on finance. So What we are doing now, one of the current projects, is that we're putting together a video production, similar to what the Catholic Church is doing, called Grief Share. And basically it's recording interviews from people who have gone through this phenomenon, and to listen to other people who have gone through that, because, you know, once something like this hits you, you don't actually want to listen to anyone with their smart stories.
Yeah.
You don't want to listen to a psychiatrist or a best friend or this or that who says, oh, sorry, I feel for you. Because you just can't feel for someone if you haven't gone through it yourself. So to listen to other people having been through the same thing, either a suicide situation or the death of a loved one or the death of a partner, we're recording those things and packaging them into to different video production units so that people who have gone through it can listen to that as a sense of healing. And I must tell you, the few videos like that I've listened to has given me enormous comfort and understanding, because you don't want to listen to someone else who says, it's okay, things will be better.
I get you.
It just doesn't ring true.
No, I can relate to that, because I also experienced death like yourself, but it was somebody very dear to me. It was a grandmother. And when people tell you to be strong, you go, do you really understand what I'm going through inside me? But before that, before the whole incident could actually take place, I didn't really know. I could tell people, oh no, stay strong, I'm here. But right now, when you're going through it, it's a different game altogether, because you don't want to hear comforting words. You just want to go through the grieving process. Can you tell us a bit about your grieving process? How did you deal with it? How did you allow the organic process to really unfold and find healing and peace and strength? Because I'm, as I said to you, you are so powerful for you to share this. Not only are you expressing your feelings, but you are encouraging other parents or other young families out there who might be going through similar situation.
Yes. I think, you know, one also has to differentiate between the types of grief that you have.
Yeah.
I've lost a grandmother that shattered me. I had beautiful conversations with her about death the day before she died and about what it will be like. My father died in 2004. We were very close. He was living on our property. And that's a different kind of death when you experience the death of a parent. To experience the death of a child is devastating. And even more so when it's a suicide. To experience the death of a partner or a spouse when you're 80 years old, when your partner dies, it's like losing a limb. It's so different, all these things, and you can't pretend to understand it unless you've been there. That's why this talking is really so important. And I think, you know, notwithstanding the want and need to be able to create these forums and to generate interviews to talk about it, there are also negative issues that have come in along the way, which has hampered me and other people in doing what we want to try and do in an effort to heal. And sometimes it's due to ignorance. Sometimes it's media or journalists or people who don't understand or don't appreciate or who are just malicious or nasty. And some of those things would really knock you and break your stride, as it's done with me as well. You know, at one point, shortly after Clara died, we started registering the foundation, and we wanted to create an income-generating hub to assist with schools and talks and this and that, or assist existing institutions like SADAG, not necessarily to re-engineer the wheel. And one morning I left home, and I saw six posters only on Empire Road that said, Clara Samar Frau Geld. Clara's mother is asking money. And this was just the furthest thing from my mind. I mean, I was putting money into establishing
this disgusting paper. Where did this come
from? That was a Bild headline.
But why? Where did it come from?
Well, because the journalist talked to me. Media 24 gave quite a bit of attention.
We need money in order to...
Yes, well, I was asked about the foundation. Yeah. And I said, well, in order... And they said, well, what do you want to do with the foundation? What do you want to achieve?
It's a skewed headline. Yes. That, isn't it wrong?
So then I said, well, I was a journalist for Bild in 1991, you know, 100 years ago. But So I knew that the night news editors who come up with the headlines is not the same people as the journalist who writes the article.
Yeah.
And the young girl asked me, so what do you want to achieve with the foundation? And I said, well, you know, if you raise 10, 20 or 50 million rand, you can go to 100 schools in a year and create awareness, come up with workbooks, life orientation material, talk to kids, come up with counselors, psychiatrists to assist and support the situation. But if you have 200 million rand, then you can create a new call center because we are far understaffed with what in relation to where the need is. But before you know how much money you can make from social responsibility budgets that emanate from listed stock exchange companies and the like, you cannot determine what your to-do list is before you know what you've got. So obviously we need money before we can determine that. And then this resulted in the headline.
Let's talk to someone who knows. We sought a clinical psychologist who's attached to a government hospital because he's dealing with a different segment. And we do have that person online. It's Mr. Marukani. Welcome to you, sir.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good. Thank you for holding on for us. We phoned you because we want to talk about what's going on in the townships with depression, teen depression, etc. I know you're attached to... Which hospital are you attached to in Pretoria?
It's Dr. Jos Mukhari Academic Hospital. It's in Garankuwa.
Oh, in Garankuwa.
That's in the north of Pretoria.
Okay. What's going on with teen depression in that area? And how do you deal with it? And yeah.
Well, Gary, suicide is still a very serious illness, and then that is actually being underrated, especially when it comes to like teenagers being treated in the hospital and all that. It's like it lacks the community of this program that needs to actually be emphasized and just focus on it, because there are a lot of things that are happening, like in the hospitals, for instance, especially the hospitals in townships. You get like a lot of children who are actually being admitted. Children between from the age of 14 years, and they go on to early adults that's around 24 or 25 years old, who are being admitted in hospital because of either attempted suicide or like they did something that's related to suicide. And it's a very serious issue. Unfortunately, for those who have like committed suicide, then we cannot really help. And considering the fact that suicide is one of the most preventative illnesses that are there, psychologically and psychiatry in that way. So a number of things have been preventing, and I just wanted to make note of the social issues that are for those who have survived suicide. And those issues include, like, for those who are in the township, the issues which seem to be contributing a lot, that would be like the HIV/AIDS illness, and you get the substance use disorder and other mental illnesses. And then you also get the other things like teenage pregnancy and bullying that are occurring and having to leave the child to actually want to decide to commit suicide. And on a different level, which is more like the social part, there's poor socioeconomic status, things that are causing poverty. And then you have like, for the older ones, you have unemployment, and then you have abuse, and then you have loss, either in a relationship or grief, or the divorce of parents, like for instance. And then also you have like a negative self-image. I think also that tying it into bullying, because a lot of younger children, like adolescents, are actually at a stage whereby their identity is very important. They're trying to discover themselves, like they're going through a stage whereby it's a challenge moving from childhood to that to adulthood.
Okay.
So let's
ask our guest in studio wants to ask you a question, Lionel.
Oh, hi, Chloe. Just wanted to find out, given the fact that the government hospitals are under-resourced and they don't have enough doctors, enough psychologists to deal with this, What has been your experience in relation to psychologists? Are you guys able to meet the demands, the high demand that you've just actually painted at the moment? And if not, what do you think needs to be done in as far as actually trying to mitigate the situation from getting out of hand?
Well, currently, I would say from my experience at the hospital that I work, there are actually enough psychologists who are able to help, like as many people as they can come in. Actually, also in the clinic now, they've been making an effort to employ a lot more psychologists.
Well, that's good news.
That is good news. And do the people outside, the community members, do they know that the service is available and in as far as also identifying, because we know that in our black communities, most of the time, children are not actually, would not be labeled as being depressed, because we know that children need to be happy playing in the street. But right now, we live in a different society where children are under pressure from the social medias of this world, from the abuse that they are actually experiencing. So in relation to the knowledge being passed to the community members, what is the government doing, or what is your institution doing to liaise with the community members so that they know what to call this thing where Lionel is sitting in the house the whole time and not talking to people?
Oh, all right. You know, I can only speak for my institution at the present moment. There have been community outreach programs that have been trying to inform a lot of children, like in schools, about depression and suicide and where they can go to, like, for instance, other social workers who are also involved in doing that. But it's something that has recently started. You know, like in most black communities, going to a psychologist is more stigmatized in a way. That is the only thing that they know about psychologists and psychiatrists is they link it to other psychiatric illnesses like psychosis and other problems. So they kind of like view going to a psychologist as being for people who are
crazy, you're mentally disturbed and other things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that has also become an issue that we've been trying to deal with. So through the community outreach program, we are trying to do that. Though I could say that in many communities, you know, we can only reach a certain extent. And In my opinion, it's very little.
Okay, thank you very much, Adlo, for your time, because we've got very much limited time at the moment. We'll just need to move on to the next one. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Yeah, that's Mr. Marokani, clinical psychologist attached to
George Mukhari Hospital. George Mukhari, at the Medunsa.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. What our listeners don't know today is that our very special guest, Liesl Gottert, is a businesswoman and international corporate communication strategist, and she acted as spokesman for Jacob Zuma for how many years?
We worked together for about 15 years, officially and unofficially.
You worked for Jacob Zuma. So you have your own views?
Yes, yeah. I do.
How was he towards you?
He
employed a white woman is quite interesting, isn't it?
Yes. He's a very kind, generous, and interesting person, and he... he understands how people think and what he should do and not do to achieve his personal objectives and that of his organization. So,
do you believe that Zuma should fall? Or is it unfair to ask you on that?
I think there's a time for everything, and perhaps his time has passed.
That was very diplomatic.
Very diplomatic. I could see why he used you. Yeah.
I'll hire you.
Yes. How have you felt about today? Does it help you a little to talk about
these
things?
Yes, it does. I think.
I guess when you get home tonight, you'll shed many tears.
Yeah, I think that you know, this is all very nice and positive and rah rah rah. We can all do cartwheels and handstands and pat each other on the back. There are difficulties that are huge. You know, I got an SMS last night from a teacher who said, Liesl, I supported you through all Clara's thing, and I sent you 100 messages. A grade 12 learner committed suicide today. What do I tell the class tomorrow morning?
Wow.
You know, all of a sudden I'm the expert. And at Clara's school, for the German school, you know, I wanted to take cupcakes to the school.
Yeah, I read that. And they,
and people don't understand, and sometimes
they refuse the cupcakes.
I think they're embarrassed or humiliated. They don't want to, you know, they feel stigmatized. Yeah, I've a family friend of mine's sister, Maureen from Diepkloof, sent me an email telling me I murdered my child. and she died because of my neglect. So
you don't believe that in any way, do you?
You know, thankfully I'm more mature to be able to handle those things.
The criticism that you may have got.
Yes, and those things are real. You know, newspapers, journalists who sometimes rip things out of proportion, people who say nasty things, I've come across that. And you've got to keep your chin up and keep focused on what needs to be done. Children need to be educated and made aware and motivated. So, you know, when some of the things the foundation aims to do, apart from the video thing where we want to elicit responses from children and parents and teachers to put a production together, is that school principals need to say that we want you to come and talk at our school. You know, yes, it'll cost ABC not a fortune just to kind of cover basics, travel and transport, to talk to our children. Surely that is a grand or two is worth the cost of a child's
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Kate, I think we both feel very strongly about that. It should be done.
Well, completely. Yeah. And I also think in terms of the parts of the media or other parents villainizing you, I think that really comes down to this is actually a possibility for every single person who has a child.
And, you know, when they attack me, frankly, they can go to hell because I know what the need is, and to continue talking about it.
That's exactly it. So, I mean, I think we also, you know what, as a parent, there's also only so much you can do. Sometimes your child does hide it from you, and just in awareness, and that's the thing. Children, teenagers in particular, lack perspective. So we look back and we think, oh, come on, you know.
But it's huge.
It wasn't a big deal.
We look at a child and we say, oh, well, this 14-year-old, this 16-year-old, so-and-so. But their lives is everything in their lives. And I remember, a number of world truths that I will carry with me until the day I die are things that I heard, statements, sentences that I heard from a teacher or a pastor when I was 15 years old. Yeah. And I will remember those words. They ring in my ears like church bells when I go through a hard time. And sometimes you just need to hear, not from your boring mom or your boring dad or your stupid sister, or, you know, when you're a teenager, you've got that attitude. And sometimes you need it from an independent adult when in your formative years.
Yeah, you're a brave and wonderful woman and a great speaker. I wasn't sure whether we could keep the show going for an hour, but I think we could go on for another hour.
Yeah.
Well done to you.
Thank you. We wish you, really,
from the bottom of all our hearts, all the best to you. You've got to live with this for the rest of your life. Don't berate yourself. I don't want to give you that piece
Thanks
of nonsense.
Thanks so much. It was lovely being here.
You're terrific. You're lovely. Yeah. You really are. Your tragic loss won't be forgotten by anyone listening to this show. I think our hope was that we've created awareness today, Kate and Lionel, and that people listening will realize that if we can just help that one person out there, we've done a great job.
That's the whole point.
If I could leave one thought with parents who may be listening now, talk to your child, look into their eyes, ask them what's bothering them, and listen to what they say. Listen to the small cues, the small things that they do, and act on that, and give them love.
To Kate, to Lionel Duncan, and to our researcher, Brigitte, Mayor, thank you very much to all of you. There's also a website I'd like to point out. It's theworstclubintheworld.org, where bereaved families support each other on the loss of a child. The worst club in the world.
Run by the indomitable
Denise Golden. You know about that, don't you?
Yes, our website is claragoethert.org.
Okay, good. Thank you very much to all of you. And on that note, we have to say goodbye on a very sad show, but I think we'll learn a lot from this. Until next Tuesday, then, I'm Gary Hertzberg.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.